Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team. For the final time, welcome to the good, the bad and the rugby and our Season 3 finale show. As we take stock of what has been an extraordinary year in the game of rugby union. Domestically, we've lost two grand old clubs. Potentially, unfortunately, there might be a third in the not-too-distant future. There is a thriving international scene with France and Ireland leading the way, England and Wales in rebuild mode, and an amazing World Cup now just 3 months away. We're going to get Hask on board a little bit later on, perhaps less for the sort of deep-dive rugby stuff, but more for our end-of-season awards. First things first, how are you? How was your weekend? How's the rev counter?
The rev counter is good. It was bad yesterday. It was bad yesterday. I was just saying to the boys, I would like it to, can someone please develop a recording device where I can just put it into my eyeballs and they can see what I can and I can download it later, because I had an unbelievable weekend at the Monaco Grand Prix. From interesting start on Friday to an epic go through the evening and get on the plane with Tom Holland on Monday. So it was good.
New best friend?
No, not news. I wouldn't say. I don't know. Tom, let me know. Reach out. He's obviously a rugby fan and had a good chat with him, and he gets everything right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's on a BA flight back with me, and someone was like, "Can I have a photo?" And he just went, "I'd love to, mate, but it's probably not the right time now on the bus." And everyone goes, "Yeah, okay." And he does it in such a way where he's not rude in any way, shape, or form. He's just like, it's an environment where there's 100 people stood on the bus. It's not the ideal one to do a photo. I'll get you later.
Protect the brand.
So yeah, he gets it right. He's a really nice lad.
Good.
And has no idea who Hask is, which makes it even better.
Yeah, no. Hask's forever chasing, isn't he? Do you know who I met at the Premiership final at the weekend? Was Rag and Bowman. Do you like Rag and Bowman?
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
He can wail, that boy.
He'd be a pretty bloody good player as well.
Yeah, he's a big old unit. I've never met.
His boys are into their rugby, I think.
You sign him up for a little episode?
I have put the word in. I'm not quite sure whether he's that interested in it, but anyway, yeah, there you go. I like seeing people who are exceptional elsewhere interested in their rugby.
Yeah.
That's what the show is about.
We've always talked about that's what we've got to dive into. You know, obviously, with Jason Fox, that flew off the shelves if we had shelves. But I think there are interesting people who are attracted to rugby, and it's what we try and sell is why are people interested in our game and why? And
take the game into everyday life rather than just concentrating on the game.
And that's why you are the best in the biz. How was your weekend?
My weekend was eventful. I was at the Premiership final on Saturday, which we will get into, a hell of a day. And I think we obviously had Simon Massey-Taylor on last week. I think this season will forever be in the history books as one of the most turbulent and challenging, and I think there are more stories to come. We'll touch on that a little bit later.
From all sides.
From all sides. But I do think once we've had a summer holiday and once we've had a Rugby World Cup, by the time the Premiership comes back to centre stage, I think we're going to be on the way back up. And that was very much the kind of... I did a bit of stuff with Prem Rugby in advance of the kickoff in a big sort of corporate function at Twickenham. And I think it's going to come back and come back quite quickly. And I think there is, you know, it's been brutal for Wasps, for Worcester. I have every sympathy for everyone connected with the clubs, the supporters, etc. And I think London Irish will end up in the same situation. But out of the chaos, I think, will come a 10-team league that will sit in the right pockets of the season, which means that the Premiership will get the best players playing at the best point. Players will get breaks and rests. I think there will be more money to go round those 10 clubs. I think Tier 2, Premiership 2, or whatever it's going to be called, will come back and come back quickly and strongly. It'll be well funded. It'll have a television deal. I'm sort of chucking out headlines here. I think we will see Wasps and Worcester and London Irish again in the near future in a Prem 2, whatever it's going to be. And I am optimistic that we will get a game that is beginning to flourish, and we are talking about the right things regularly rather than kicking it along the street. There's going to be a bit more blood to be shed before then, but I'm hopeful. I don't often say that, but I am hopeful.
Good.
Would you drink to that?
I would definitely drink to that. I've spent a lot of time over the past few days talking about how good our sport is. You know, I was out with a couple of guys from Swansea City who were out in Monaco, and I got to spend a bit of time with them. Great lads, but you know, from a side where they're playing their championship football, and you know how everything works for them, it's just a different gravy that we need to step up our game as domestic rugby from our point of view, but can be done. I think we have the fans, the fan base out there. We're no different to the fan base that's in France, and France have a very good model that that works for them and keeps them in good conditions. Why can't we do that?
I think there are going to be a lot of busy people this summer backstage in corner offices at Twickenham and Prem Rugby, European Rugby, URC, etc.
Still excited. When is that Six Nations doco coming?
Not till next year. That should have been
out before the World Cup.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Little tweaks, we'll get there.
I suppose there's a lot of footage to go through.
There is. But even
then,
so,
it's more how you put it all together.
Scheduling rather than anything else, but... Let's start then with the Premiership final, which obviously took place at the weekend. And after Leinster and La Rochelle served up an absolute banger the week before, Globo Gym and Average Joes did the same in the Twickenham Summer Sunshine, with Saracens eventually coming through to win their sixth Premiership title, their first in 4 years, with a 35-25 victory over Sale in front of 61,000 highly entertained spectators. Kudos from the off for the Sale fans, who were absolutely sensational. And... it just really reinvigorated. People say rugby is a northern game played by whatever it is, but the Northern Rugby Matters crew who were there on Saturday, they generated the atmosphere. So, and you'd be a big fan of that.
Yeah, well, it comes with some just great crack up north. Yeah. So then if you look at the sort of football mentality and creating songs and just being loud and being able to have fun with it at the same time, that is something that the North offers in great abundance. Yeah. You know, everyone loves chatting to everyone up North. And
everybody love everybody.
ELE, baby. ELE.
Well done, the Sale fans. But what we are going to start with is well done, Saris, because they have been through the washing machine as a club. They have served their time. They have had to go through a lot of sort of purgatory, I suppose. But they are back at the top of English rugby, and deservedly so. You cannot argue that they were not the best team across the board this year in England.
No, without a shadow of a doubt. I think from set up to how they deliver the product on the field, they've led the way for God knows how many years now. People always bring back to the financial side of it and what they ended up going into purgatory for, but that doesn't change how you operate as a group and how you go and what you do off the field behind the scenes, and how you create a team that has all the tools to go and keep winning finals. No, it's not it's their first one in 4 years, but they are now arguably as well one of the best teams to watch.
Yeah, you know, the first win in four years.
We've always talked about how good Bristol did play last year. You look at the likes of Quins and how they play, but you have to have the balance between playing, but ultimately it all goes down to wins, and they've been able to, you know, you'd say the first two titles they won was on the back of pragmatic rugby.
Yeah.
But all the way through that journey, you could see them loosen the not the purse strings, that's the wrong word, that'll get them in trouble again. loosen their
game plan.
Yes, their nuts and bolts, to allow them to play from all parts of the field, allow the players that they have on the field to dictate how they want to get things done. And now you see that a great balance. Yes, there's still the aerial game and the box kicking and the contest that side, but then they free things up with the likes of Max Malins, Alex Good, Maitland when he unfortunately had to go off quite early on, but they allow those guys. Nick Tompkins, I think, is a great player as well. They just give them the freedom to go out there and play and trust them to, when need be, get back to the nuts and bolts and do that well. Yeah. But when you see an opportunity, they go for it.
I don't know about you. Only really do I get to go and watch England games now. I haven't been to very many Premiership matches recently.
I'm the same, yeah.
And I absolutely loved all the bits that you see on game day that you never get access to through watching on telly. So there's some... Because I was doing this sort of this stuff before the game. I was ended up sitting in the Royal Box, and it was fascinating watching how big an impact Ben Curry had from his seat in the front row of the Royal Box. They had people coming back all the time. What have you seen? What have you seen?
Yeah.
And I think there's something very interesting around current players as the role of coaches. And if you think about now, I was just thinking about some of those players who aren't necessarily going to be picked or will be injured for the Rugby World Cup. Johnny Sexton potentially being one. We'd love to see him there in his boots. But if he's not, I would take him, if I was Ireland,
I think,
the World Cup as a coach. Alan Wynne-Jones, I would say, you don't want to play, but we'd love to have you there for your experience, your nous and your expertise. Justin Tipperick too. George Ford potentially. These are guys who play, but are all going to go through as coaches as well, presumably.
I think if Johnny Sexton isn't fit, they will definitely take him.
He's going to have to behave a bit better than he did at the Champions Cup final.
That's also what makes Johnny Sexton Johnny Sexton, isn't it? We can't talk about, which is going to come up later in the show, yeah, but we can't talk about, you know, wanting characters and then,
yeah,
and then expect them to hide
away.
But you've
got to play within the boundaries. I mean, the alleged rumours. Love Johnny, but that is...
Of course you are. But then that's, again, this goes back to what myself and Hass says. You can't ask people to be on the edge of emotion and not to fall across the wrong side every now and again. And that's just got to be a part of sport. And it is. It's a passion. And it's sometimes passions can boil over. Now, as long as you try and learn from it and try and get better with it, apologise and do whatever, then it shouldn't be a hampner about whether you should be involved in something like that. I mean, I think there was history there already, wasn't there? So for him to be in the position he was because of what had happened the year before. You know, we'll wait and see what comes off the back of it, but it would be a shame not to see him on the sidelines. And also, it's good for him in terms of career planning for next steps. Does he want to be there on the sideline? I mean, you go to a World Cup experience and you love it, then it drives you to want to be the best coach if he wants to be a coach going forward.
I think he might take some time out, Johnny Sexton, from all things rugby, but you wouldn't bet against him coming back into a coaching box at some point in the future. So we'll get into some of the little bits and bobs, etc. But can we just start with Owen Farrell, first of all, who... I'm going to read what Mark McCall said about him. If you spent the week at our training ground, you would not believe just how influential he is, how clear he is with the playing group, how emotive he is, what the standards are that he sets, how supportive he is to teammates young and old. He played the best rugby of his life as well, but his leadership is going to a whole new level. When the game is in the battles, and it was 25-23 and we lacked a bit of energy, it wasn't just Owen, but our senior players grasped the nettle really and saw us through very well in the last 15 or 20 minutes. England are in a hurry coming into this World Cup because they've got a lot of work to do and do it quickly. Is it just build it around Owen, or is that too simplistic?
No, look, if you get Faz to play how he plays for Saris, then no one's ever going to moan about him playing for England. It's actually how England play at the moment, where whether Faz has too much to do or whether he has to try and pull too many strings or try and do too many. He doesn't ever seem to just go out and play like he plays for Saris. Now, why is that? You know, you've talked about in the past and the fact that our island's so good because Leinster are basically one team with three people from different teams. Yeah. Now, you put all the English qualified players from that Saris team into that England team, you'd probably have, hopefully, you'd get him playing like he plays for Saris. So, he doesn't change as a player. His job and the game plan will shift. But at the moment, it's like having two different players. Now, what England have got to do is find how to get the best version of Owen Farrell on the field, because when it comes to test match rugby, he is your best fly half by a mile, because he's proved it.
In terms of temperament and...
Yeah, physicality, temperament, managing a game. But then you have to have the rugby that backs it up that allows him to do that. And at the moment, we don't have that. I think you can't understand how well Nick Tompkins is playing and how much that just takes a lot of pressure off Fats. Whereas at the moment, do we have that in the centre without Manu playing? Manu, you could see against Ireland, Manu just comes and takes a lot of the stress about how go forward. It's that about Manu.
He had some big moments on Saturday as well.
So, that would be great if Manu's coming back into form as well, just going into this period. Probably upsetting for Sale, but as they tee him up for another international journey. But, that's the fundamental. He's getting the team playing that suits the players, and I just don't think we've quite got there yet. Now, can we do that in a in a pre-season period. Of course we can. That's what World Cup training camps are there for. And then you hope you see you deliver what you can on the in the warm-up games. But if you broke it down to all three of those players playing their best game at a World Cup, who would you want to pick? Of course, you go with experience, you pick Fats.
Yeah.
And that's something that Steve Borthwick has to be careful of. Something where what Eddie obviously went the other way was, is obviously people are always going to tell you, you should pick this guy, you should pick this guy, you should pick this guy. Now, what you find is when you pick a consistent team, you'll get better performances because they get to know each other better. They feel confident in their... I know everyone should always say you don't feel comfortable in your seat or you shouldn't expect to be picked. But at the same time, if you know that or things don't change that often, you get consistency in performance because you get used to playing together. And I still don't think that England team has that.
But I was going to say, from an Owen Farrell perspective, I think England fans will not recognise how much they value him until he's gone. It's not until he's departed that we will really miss him because he has been the identity. Can you see him making another World Cup off the back of this?
Yeah, look, he's 31 years old, which everyone forgets. Everyone sort of seems to think he's like Johnny Sexton's age.
Yeah.
But he's not. And he's probably from a playing, he's just at the end of his, what people would always say is your peak, you know, that 28 to 30 is when they reckon you're at your rugby peak or whatever. But I'm not entirely sure whether that's accurate or not. But yeah, he still quite happily can operate at that level. He keeps still winning trophies for his club. Obviously, this first one in a little while, but they're in the conversation of every league they play in, every competition that they play in. He continuously delivers a better performance for Sarries. That's got to be the bigger question: is how do you then allow everyone? You mean, look at Marrow was back on the weekend. Carrying well, looking strong, annoying. So that's what needs to come in the England squad. That's what it needs to set. And that's the biggest thing. Don't worry about the players that are picked. It's getting the team to do. And as I say, if you picked the majority of those Sarries boys that are England qualifier, you'd probably have arguably a better England team.
You mentioned Faz and Manny. And again, just from watching the game live, there was a lovely moment when Max Malins scored his try off Owen.
Yep.
Lovely little pool ball. Manu clattered Owen and the two of them sort of picked each other up with a pat on the backside. And you miss those little bits on television. But he's obviously got so much respect from everybody on the field whenever he's there. I'd wanted to move that on to some of the stars of the day, really. So I thought Duncan Taylor off the bench was sensational, did exactly what he needed to. But the performance of Malins, I think one of the newspapers said it was his finest performance in a Sarries shirt. Is he one of those players who... he doesn't necessarily garner a lot of headlines, and I'm curious as to why that is, but he just has got... he's a Swiss Army penknife of a rugby player.
Does everything exceptionally well.
Yeah.
But without any... you talk about tall poppies and everything else. He doesn't seem like a tall poppy, but he's interesting. No one looks at him and goes, wow, he looks like an athlete, or he moves like an athlete, but he is. Yeah. That line, he was... one of the hardest things when you're just crabbing across the field as Faz is coming around the corner, because it was off a couple of offloads back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then he just went bang, straight line, Faz dropped him in, boom, through, underneath the sticks, away you go. And, you know, and even when crossfield kicks come in on the edge, results always seem to go his way.
Yeah.
He anticipates what the ball's going to do, but better than most people. He's good under the high ball. He backs himself to the hilts. He can kick. He can grubber things through. We've seen some great tries where, you know, he just puts the ball in behind, sits back up, and he scores these tries. And when you've got players like that, you've got to trust them, which I think Mark McCall does now. He just lets them get on with it and knows that they'll make the right decision. And as I say, we just want, if for England going forward, we just need to be able to get those performances out of him in an England jersey, because what falls underneath, someone like Henry Slade still falls underneath that.
Yeah.
Great for Exeter, but then never really gets the opportunities where he wants the ball to allow him to be him. And they're the bigger questions coming out of going into this World Cup. How do we get that?
A nod to Sale. Sum up their year.
I think they've had a fantastic year. I think I don't underestimate how influential Alex has been, Alex Sanderson, in terms of what he's done. I think he's that new breed of coach that understands the power of the team, and a team that enjoy their time together, enjoy spending that emotional energy with each other and understanding each other. And, you know, they've had they're always going to slightly go a little bit more under the radar, being up north. They're always going out a bit more like the workmen, but they've done an incredible thing as a team, and hopefully, you know, they'll keep challenging and they'll, you know, they'll learn to get those victories when they need it. And, you know, I think Sarries were just so on point the weekend to go down, you know, with 10 minutes to go or whatever it was, and then to hold out for that period of time and just back their defence. And they talked about that a lot in, I think it was in the semi-final, was it?
Yeah.
Was it a semi-final where they were just... It was all about their defence.
Ferocious.
Yeah, and that comes off the back of building a good group of players. So, look, Sale will be back. They'll want to get better. They'll want to challenge more. And, you know, I think they can do that.
We've spoken, haven't we, about teams having to go to the sharp end and lose a few times in order to get acclimatised and accustomed to it before often the silverware comes. Absolutely. I think Sale have got something building very nicely up there. Just a nod again to their supporters, who I thought were absolutely fantastic. The other thing, talking of support, I just quickly wanted to touch on was the URC final played in Cape Town. And we don't spend a lot of time talking about the URC, but actually the last few weeks have been really worth watching. Munster, I will always have a little soft spot for Munster because of the years I spent covering them in Europe and the emotion and the extraordinary tales.
Travelling fans, their fans look like they were banging form when they're out there as well.
Amazing. And not only were the fans incredible who went out to South Africa, but also the reception that the team had at Thomond Park when they brought the trophy back as well. Graham Rowntree, though, and we talk about that England coaching ticket of 2015, the impact that they are now having in Ireland is quite extraordinary, with Andy Farrell, Stuart Lancaster, Graham Rowntree, okay, Mike Catt, etc. But just a word for your old teammate as well. He said, "I'm immensely proud of my lads." It was a lovely moment at the full-time whistle where he just put his head in his hands. And there was a very nice moment in the press conference where he got very stuck into a beer or three as he was going through the sort of the post-match formalities. Just one of the game's good guys, and it is very nice to see him back with trophies in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a strange one for a guy from the ABC club back in the day who still has that connection, sort of he understands the emotional drivers of young men, without going it fully into, you know, hardcore, old school, this is how you do it, flogging type thing. And, you know, I think he's always been that guy. I always remember a moment we shared on the field where, because obviously he's used to old school backs, wasn't he, at his time, who didn't really want to get stuck in. And there was a restart where I could have let someone, a back row, carry it and get hit or whatever. And I carried it and then just put my head down and ran into the whole pack. And he cleared me out and he's gone, you know, just as I get him up, he's like pulled me off and goes, "Fair fucks, I'm glad you're on my team." And it was just like that sort of like where you feel actually you're validated in some way.
Yeah.
To get it off a prop is very rare.
Yeah.
So I sort of, I don't remember much of that stuck in my mind because, you know, it's sort of what I wanted to be. He was like, and have the forward pack that could trust you. And he was sort of, it was sort of him giving me the nod that, yeah, we'll trust you to carry the ball every now and again.
Yeah.
And that was very early on in my career. And he's always been that guy who you can always have a lovely beer with and have a good conversation, and it's very rarely about rugby, it's about life and other things. And it's so he's got that balance right, and he knows how to bring people together. I think he's been through tough times as a coach, a coach as well. He's been a bit all over the place as well. He seems to have found his spiritual home in one of the places where he used to probably go have some of his most epic fights. So I'm really happy for him, and I'm really happy for that coaching group. You know, they were doing, yes, 2015, what didn't go their way, but they were still, if you look at the lead up to that, that was a great coaching group. So what we said at the time, I was just really disappointed in that they didn't go, you know, Stuart didn't just go, right, do what Clive did and go, give me four more years, I know I can win this.
Yeah.
Yes, I got it wrong this time, but then he's gone off and you would say he's added strings to his bow and he's probably got better. So when the time comes right for him to, whether it be back at England, whether it be a better, I mean, he's definitely going to coach another international group at some point. Obviously, he's taking the next step back into the mainstream by going into Racing as head of rugby. You look at the players that he's got there and whether he can deliver, whether they'll listen to him as much as the Leinster boys did. Hopefully they will, and he'll deliver some performances for them and then see where it goes from there.
John Hodnett with a crucial try for Munster, 5 minutes from time. And just brilliant, brilliant scenes at the end with Peter O'Mahony and Keith Earls and Conor Murray, etc., who have had some tough times around Munster way. But it's great for English rugby when the likes of Leicester are strong. It sort of feels good for the game when Munster are doing good things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Would you buy into that?
You want the greats. You want the European greats. You want the legacy clubs to always be performing because, you know, we've said it time and time again. Even if you look at football, when Man United aren't really in the mix, people notice, and it's the same if when Leicester 2 years ago were bottom of the table, when Bath aren't doing well, people want them to be back. I mean, ironically, now Bath went from a terrible season to getting into Europe. That just shows where rugby is right now, and you need those great clubs to step up. You know, if we're going to lose clubs like Wasps for a little while, you need the older ones to step up and fulfil those holes. And hopefully, they'll do that. And wish them all the best. And he's such a nice guy.
Yeah,
and anyone who has had to put up with ears like that for as long as he has deserves every success.
Amen to that. Heroic Munster, congratulations. Just a quick word, actually, because I have definitely stuck question marks around South African sides in the URC and Europe, but actually the Cape Town Stadium was absolutely ramming. It was an evening game. It looked sensational. And the reason more than happy to hold my hands up is that not only does it sort of feel like it's now definitely working in the URC, but actually it's really good to see full stadiums in South Africa again. It's been a long time since we've seen proper big sporting spectacles in that rugby land. I used to do the Currie Cup years ago for Sky, and those were big days, but that was 15, 20 years ago. There's been a lot of rugby in between, in which it's been one man and his dog in there watching. And I'm from a personal perspective, I'm delighted to see not only the URC energised by South African teams joining, but also South African rugby energised by the URC.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree we didn't really understand it. Do I still think it's right? Not all the time, being in European competition, but...
If we drop the Europe and it's now just Champions Cup, it probably works.
Yeah, I think that's true. You can't go against the rebrand if you... You can't moan about us needing to change rugby with them and then moaning about a rebrand. So it was more about them buying into it. And originally at the very start, I don't think they understand it. I think you'd say fans didn't really understand what they were playing in.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that is changing. You read a lot more from South African people that I have contact in, and they're talking about it a lot more. And I think they understand it. And that they are a sporting magnation that want to win. So I feel that, they finally got it. They finally understand how big the games are that they're playing, and then that's showing in how many people are turning up. And they, having those teams in have raised the attendance levels by far in the URC. Yeah, obviously we talked with Sam Massey-Taylor about getting the European setup back to its former self, or finding a new way of it going forward for the future. Because I don't think that league, how it was structured now, I don't think I still understand it, but get it back to something where everyone knows what they're getting their teeth into, having those Jeopardy final days, having the back-to-backers, whether that always happens, we'll see, but keeping it all based around rivalries, I think there's good news are coming.
Yeah,
I was about to go into Johnny Cash then. Rolling around the bend, and hopefully it's the start of what rugby needs in terms of getting that global season and everything going.
What you do also see from the Prem and the URC this year is there are many ways to win a trophy. Sarries led from the off and went all the way to the finish line. Munster went away in the quarters, away in the semis, away in the final, and got the job done. Beautiful. I love the sort of the
many ways to skin a cat. Wasps were the kings of that. Finished on top, finished top, but always timing came through. Yeah.
Well done, Sarries. Well done, Munster. From the highs of trophy topping teams to London Irish. We have asked a couple of the London Irish crew if they wanted to come on this week and give us a bit of an update. But I think as we record this, which is Tuesday lunchtime, I think by 5 o'clock today, what we're expecting is the RFU to say, that's it, you will not be featuring in Premiership rugby next year. Interesting, actually, again, at this Premiership thing I was doing on Saturday, was speaking to someone within the club who said they still think the deal will be done. It just might not be done by 5 o'clock. So there will be headlines written and there will be, I suppose, decisions made whether they can be undone should the money hit the bank and everybody sort of say, right, let's move on with it. I don't know. But it's sort of been the theme of this season, really, hasn't it?
You would hope that if it was tomorrow and the deal got done, or if it was 2 weeks down the line, I know it's all about scheduling and making sure everyone's got clear, but why can't you be prepared for two? In terms of, I know there's a lot of probably work that goes into that, but is it not worth it if you can keep them in and it might not be for 2 weeks that deal gets done? And I just feel it's sometimes we're finite when it doesn't need to be finite. And then sometimes, you know, we could probably give a little bit more for the good of the game rather than the RFU, who are very good at just going like, no.
Yeah.
Whereas there could be loads of questions where people will go, the RFU should be just, no, don't get involved in professional game because you've just got no sense of feeling or everything else. You just talk about Irish fans. They've been brilliant this year in a brilliant stadium, and they've been a brilliant club to watch. They've had a real mix of...
But that doesn't translate into what's in the piggy bank.
Of course it doesn't. They don't own their own stadium. They don't make, I mean, their money is so doesn't operate the same thing because they don't have anything that's their own. Yeah. Unfortunately, they sold Sunbury, did they?
I presume, yes, for housing, I think.
Yeah, whereas if they still had that and they could redevelop it or they could sell, find a different plot that they could build something on.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's the case. But even if they do save it this year, that's something you've got to find. They have to find their own home that is theirs, because otherwise you can't build something.
No. We shall see with London Irish. Can I just say, just as a 2P as well, emotions are always going to run very, very high around desperate situations like this. But there are a lot of people shooting a lot of people in positions of power here. I'm certainly not here to defend Bill Sweeney or Simon Massey-Taylor, but it's worth stipulating that London Irish had £30 million worth of debt long before Simon Massey-Taylor became the chief exec of Premiership Rugby. I don't think Bill Sweeney or Simon Massey-Taylor are ever in a position to salvage a club that has got the problems it has. No. It's important to recognise who the people are that are meant to be making the saving of these clubs, not just shooting everyone at the top.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes, I agree. They have a very difficult job, but that's also what they've been brought in to deal with. Now, the irony is, if just imagine if London Irish got to the semis and then got to the final, and then they could have won it, and that could have been the swan song. I mean, you know, you want to, if one of your best teams on the field, you want to try and protect that if you can. That's my thing. Is I just hope the RFU aren't too ruthless about it. I get it. I understand the money side of it, and that's something they've got to plan for the future. But that group of players created something special this year from where they've been in previous years, and it'll be a shame that their reward might be to not have a job.
Yeah. Okay, well, good luck to all involved with London Irish, and let's hope that we do see you doing what you do best with full stadiums and full hearts before too long. Should we move on to a couple of other bits and bobs? So Barbars against the World 15. Alan Wynne-Jones played for 80 minutes, played like Michael Jordan at times, dreadful off the kicking tee. Eddie Jones was there on great form. I think the subplot to this extraordinary game at Twickenham 48-42 is the fact that in France, in September, with the sun shining, some of these Tier 2 teams, as they are acknowledged to be, are going to cause havoc.
Yeah.
Fiji, Tonga, Samoa could seriously upset the apple cart. And when you look at the likes of Semi Randrandra, Seta Tamanavalu, Israel Folau, who obviously divides opinion as he goes, Charles Pietau, if some of those boys get the sniff of an upset, I think we could have some absolute carnage in France.
I completely agree. You know, the skill set that was on show, you know, Semi Randrandra is just so good. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, Fiji and Samoa sit on the C and the D side of it, so the England and Australia's beware. But if they get their day. You know, we've seen it in Fiji. Fiji have almost been there in places before. Yeah.
Was 2007, it? Wales they did, and then very nearly did South Africa.
Yeah, and I think the more of the Pacific Island boys that are now playing in France, and they're pulling things together better when they get together.
And the Drua in Super Rugby, there's more and more game time happening as a collective.
So hopefully, as long as they look after them and they get everything right off the field when they come together in the World Cup camps or whatever, then yes, without doubt there's a talent there.
And their spacing is now equal to the Tier 1 teams. They used to play four games in 20 minutes in a pool stage, and that was it. Thanks a lot, off you go. Now they've got rest and recovery.
Yeah.
Hold on to your hats.
I mean, to have South Africa, Ireland, Scotland, and then a Tonga that not only could cause you problems, but could also, from a physical point of view, create some issues. That is a physical group.
Yeah.
You've got to look after your players in that group.
The back lines on Saturday, and we said this actually in the coverage, the back lines on Saturday were like garages of supercars.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have a lot of fun watching that horsepower does best.
I'll never forget coaching the Barbars where I had
Jose Aguirre or Rico?
Jose, then I had
Rocathoco.
Yeah, and Rennie Ranger. And it's like, well, what moves do you want to do on a chase bat? And I'm like, lads, You're in a different. You operate in a different place to me. Can you just do whatever you want? And then we've got the ball one time. Joe Rokocoku, by the way, is one of the best players I've ever seen train. Yeah. Mills Muliaina was in there as well. Actually, it runs like he's got a force field around him. Never seen anything like it. Just people fall off him everywhere. I was like, I've always respected how good he was, but to actually play with him on, there is a difference between playing against someone and playing with someone. And he, people just falling off him left, right, and then really, they just scored this try. Someone kicked long. Joe did like one of these dummies where you sort of throw it all around your back and everyone's run off the other way and he's running back down this thing. Rennie Ranger cut, does a switch with him, he comes back. And I'm just there going, and everyone's going, great move, coach. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that was me.
This is what I built.
Here's my CD. I was just like, well, no, that's just them. Incredible. And you saw that again with some of the offloads on the weekend. And just the ability to keep the ball alive, understand how to manipulate defenders. You know. Kids, please watch that.
Please watch. I'm looking at Pool C as well. Well, Wales, Australia, Fiji, Vern Cotter.
Yeah. There's another point to come up is how many good coaches are coaching internationally. Yeah. The disbursement of coaches that have been through good times, bad times, but then come around to another international job. And if you get one of the Pacific Island jobs right and you really bond with that team and you can get them to understand, play together, mainly it's nuts and bolts, isn't it? It's about exits and not getting too over-eager all the time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there's some great players there who can cause problems.
Three other quick bits before we get into our end of season awards. So well done, Vicky Fleetwood, who has hung up her boots as a World Cup winner and an absolute legend of all things Red Roses. Good luck with whatever is next for you. Not many people will have seen this, I'm sure, but there was an article in the Telegraph this week about the fact that the Lions, in 2 years' time, is going to have a full house from the start. So the Premiership are going to move their final to a week earlier, which means that from the off, the Lions will unite as one and go together, which I think is the first time since 2001. I think 2005 they were still piecing it together after they'd gone. So good to see that. We love the Lions. We're talking about the Lions on our things we love most about rugby. And it's so good to see collaboration amongst leagues and unions and a recognition that a rising tide floats all boats. And for the first time in a long time, there is a bit of give and a bit of take. Well done to all involved in that.
Yes, indeed.
And last but not least, I don't think anyone in France listens to this show, but we were talking about the fact that England need to take their Six Nations games on the road, particularly off the back of the weekend as we talk about Northern Rugby Matters. In next year's Six Nations, France are not going to be using Stade de France, which is an absolute godsend for any travelling fan because, frankly, it's in the arse end of nowhere. And obviously they're setting up for the Olympic Games. So they're going to host Ireland at the Stade Velodrome in Marseille, which is, I think, in my top three stadiums of all time. Italy and Lille, and England are off to Lyon on the 16th of March. Chapeau.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The only thing I'd say for this is everyone working together? Because the biggest problem with taking England on the road is Twickenham make so much money for the game from there. Now, yes, you want to grow the game, but how much are they then giving to the stadiums that are going? And it doesn't go back into rugby. That's a deal that needs to be done.
I agree with that, but can we find a way of...
Well, no, that's the question. Because I went to World Cup game at St James's Park where it was absolutely rammed. The atmosphere was brilliant, insane.
I did that one.
And obviously, they also did a Champions Cup up there as well, haven't they? I'd love to see it. I remember playing at, was it Old Trafford? I was commentating when Quaits volleyed that ball and Ugo, and the atmosphere was insane.
Yeah.
So I think it is a great thing to do, but also to put the boring side of it, you've got to understand that all those pennies goes.
But what we were saying is if the Red Roses start selling Twickenham out...
Yeah, well, you'd be... Yeah.
I think you're only allowed a limited number of games at Twickenham anyway. So if you can build up the Red Roses to enable the men to then go on tour, win-win. Feed the beast.
Indeed, but slightly different price points.
Yep, but...
Unfortunately.
You've got to grow it.
Well, we've got to figure out.
You cannot just be a South West London hub for... Chins and barbers.
I agree. It's got to work though.
That's some good rugby in there, actually. Should we bring in the Hoff to lower the tone? And no, I joke and I jest. Let's do an end of season wrap up on all that's been going on the pitch and for us as well. So, Haskell, lovely to have you with us. How are you? Where are you? What's happening?
I'm good, thank you. I'm in the south of France. I'm actually in a place called Saint-Paul-de-Vence at the moment. Just chilling out. Obviously, had a crazy weekend at Monaco Grand Prix. It sort of started on Friday night with a DJ set on one yacht and 3 days later, four more sets on four different yachts. And honestly, they got progressively bigger every time. The one that was most outstanding was, I don't really know the name of it, but it was where basically all the individuals had paid 60,000 euros to basically drive their supercars to Monaco. And then in celebration, they put on this party. And they, you know, most people sort of had a set of decks on the boat. They had built a full stage with dancers, cocktails, drinks, like just levels of wealth you could never comprehend. So, and then I went out with Chris Gayle on Sunday evening. I'm not sure he knew who the hell I was, but we had a good hug. He's a very sexy man. And then I came, I got bed about 5:30 and I'm honestly dead come yesterday, but now I'm slightly refreshed and now I've got a sort of calmer week as we build back into Ibiza in 2 weeks' time.
Just tell me about Chris Gayle. I mean, was there sort of comparisons of sporting greatness between the two of you, or was it just the love of the party?
I mean, he's a big unit as well. That's always helps. Big men at a party, two big men. He's actually, I think he's taller than me. Yeah, he's a very good guy. Obviously dressed up to nines and sort of a black and white sort of, I want to say like zebra print setup. I can't remember exactly what he was wearing because I was so drunk. And I befriended a couple of Australians who were now best friends, who I'm not sure what they do, but they were, I think they're hairdressers actually. I mean, I haven't got a lot of use for that, but maybe come November. But they were great form. We just chatted really and sort of laughed, but it was kind of, I don't think he knew really who I was. There's a lot of tight smiles and a lot of kind of like, yeah, mate, yes, sweet. And then just, it wasn't, I'm not going to say we're going to be carrying on contact post this trip. Oh, here he was. Yeah, he was wearing a black and white, well, it's a black, whole full black and white cohort with writing on it. But and he had like chains, full shades, dreads on, hat.
Loves a chain.
Amazing. Life in the fast lane.
Tom Kerridge I saw as well. Tom Kerridge.
Oh, yeah, he was out there, was he? He loves his rugby, didn't he?
Yeah, he's fantastic, Tom Kerridge. What a boy. Met all his team. They cooked on a couple of the boats I was on, and the food was next level, which was good. Apart from Chloe kept handing it over to me while I was DJing the decks, like Parmesan's going on all the controllers and going in the bits and pieces. So, so you know, I got full, and we did about £3,000 worth of damage, but apart from that, it was fine.
What very M&S problems, yeah. Hummus in the mixer.
Yes.
I can see that you've changed, Ask. Okay, right, I tell you what we're going to do. Let's have this very quick kind of fly through. This is not exhaustive. It's not definitive. I'm sure everyone else will have their own views on what has been over the last 9 months or so. But we're going to pick out a couple of highlights, I suppose, in amongst a number of categories, just, I suppose, to mark the card of what has been a season of real highs and certainly despairing lows. But should we start with best game? Chuck us a couple that you have really enjoyed and that live long in the memory.
Well, obviously we talked about the Leinster-La Rochelle game, didn't we?
Yeah.
Last week, there's been a few epic Prem games. Exeter, what was it, 40-something?
42 Quins.
Quins.
That's a hell of a game.
It was a pretty good game. You know, you look at the games over the weekend, I think you look at even the Munster game was tight when it went to the end. The Prem game was a brutal, high-quality sort of test matchy level with Globo Gym coming out on top. You then go back to the Six Nations, you look at the games in there, Ireland, France. You keep forgetting we've got to go back to the November test, yeah, as well. The games, the wins that Ireland had in there, England's comeback. It wasn't a great game against New Zealand, but obviously they had that very good last 10-minute comeback. So there has been games galore. I think we've said previously for Six Nations for the last 4 years that it seems to get better each year. And again, you go back to all those, even some of the Italy games this year,
yeah,
were just incredible to watch. I think we've been spoilt, actually. I'm going to still say that I think that that European final did claim all the plaudits and deserved to, and because it's only a few weeks ago, I can remember it better than any others.
They do blur into one after a while. Leinster-La Rochelle better than Ireland-France in the Six Nations?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he was, and I went back because we'd mentioned that, and so I went back and re-looked at that. Just don't think that there was some epic moments from France, but I don't think they weren't there for the full 80, whereas La Rochelle and Leinster, they both brought it for the full 80 minutes. And, it, you know, if France could have been a little bit more consistent in that game, I think it would have gone closer to the wire. But, you know, Ireland was just too good that day.
Best tries, Hask.
No chance.
I'd say Van der Merwe's try versus England was pretty special. I thought he was brilliant. He ran really fast, didn't he? And knocked a few people out of the way. I think Pernot against Ireland was very good as well.
Well, thanks for dialing in.
France obviously scored some good tries against us. The last Pernot try was just...
That was mega, wasn't
clinical
it?
French at its best.
Yeah.
Start a play, touched every, I think every player in the back line, touched the ball, and then he scored in the corner. I think James Lowe's try that should never have been was...
The foot somehow didn't hit the ground despite hitting the ground.
So
hell of a finish, though, to be fair.
Hell of a finish, but I might have been France. With someone over the week last week, and they had that footage all the way through, and... It might have been that the Irish crew chose not to show it, is what I heard. So on the world feed, they had that angle straight from the start, but it never got shown when they were
reviewing
the try.
So that's not the first time. That's a big statement, but that's allegedly. But I've heard similar before. I've heard similar in South Africa where they've done the opposite. There was a game against New Zealand, box against New Zealand, and there was a late shot, and Pat Lambie kicked a three-pointer from halfway, but they stuck it on the big screen to get the penalty.
Right.
I wonder whether it's neutral directors as well as neutral GMs.
But you don't know that it gets lost in the world feed, that it didn't get through in time, because obviously first thing that's shown at halftime is the correct angle that shows it's clearly touched the floor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it doesn't take away what a hell of a finish it almost was. I think one of the most important tries was probably Dan Sheehan, who scored straight against France off that inside ball. Just well worked, well rehearsed. What Ireland do well.
Was that was against England, wasn't it?
Was it against England or was that against France?
He scored a few this year, Dan Sheehan. Yeah, and to be fair, Shane Horgan tipped him about 2 years ago. I think he'd probably be Lions 2 at the moment, don't you?
It might have been England. It might be the first
I think it was
5 minutes of England. But just how Ireland, just when they get into their detail and their execution, and then obviously having a hooker that moves like a back also helps.
Yeah. Anthony Watson against Wales. England had tough times this year, but that was a nice finish, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well created. And I thought Ramos's first against England.
I mean, they scored quite a few nice ones in that game, to be fair. Going back to that, there's some quite nice ones from the weekend in that World 15 versus the Barbars. Yes. There's some ridiculous offloading.
Favourite players this season, Hask? Not called Antoine Dupont. Let's start with that.
I thought Ollie Lawrence was brilliant for England. I think him having a bit of a rough ride under Eddie, or not feeling like he was given the recognition or the chance, and then having to move clubs and then play as well as he did from Worcester to Bath, and then ultimately sort of cement that place with England as the go to man, as the game line man. I thought he was very exciting, very good.
Hugo Keenan,
yep.
I think has been outstanding. Mack Hansen,
yep,
has been outstanding. Obviously, we're not going to talk about the man that is Antoine Dupont. Who else has been?
Aldrich went well in Europe, didn't he?
Yeah, Aldrich, he went very well. I'm going to go for the other side of it. Sarah Byrne.
Yep.
Has been outstanding. Like I generally think she's the best player at the moment in the women's game by a long way.
Yeah.
It's insane. She makes more yards than a back or a winger, and they get to run the ball back.
Best of the boys in England colours, Hask.
Well, I said, I think Ollie Lawrence. I think for me, Ellis or Ollie, I'd say.
I thought Jack Willis really sort of came back with a bang, and I'm quite excited to see how he can go in the World Cup. Freddie Stewart was great for us. I think he's got a bigger role to play when we can get our back line sorted out and how we want to play. Anthony Watson coming back, I think he's very exciting for us. I thought Marrow played well on the weekend, which is good to see at the end of a season before we go into...
There are a few
into,
of them beginning to get back to their lines out of 10,
which we need. So hopefully Jamie George is good. He tells me he's okay, because we'll need him, even though that Dan that came
Theo
on...
Theo
Dan was very good on the weekend. But talking England-wise still, sorry, I've segued.
I'd chuck in Tom Pearson as well for London Irish, who as an up-and-comer, we love up-and-comers on this show, and I think he's going to have his day when the sun really shines on his back. I tell you what, Hask, the thing I want to... It's been a fairly turbulent season, but if I threw you the biggest statement of the 2022-23 season, where would you go with...
I'd say that the Sale fans, they were brilliant when they came to Twickenham. The whole sort of slogan, Northern Rugby Matters. I think I upset some of them. I got a few messages from some of the Sale players that I reined it back in at the end, because basically I sort of took away one hand and gave the other, just saying they are quality, but they were average shows in comparison to the conglomerate that is Saracens, the unstoppable, emotionless force that is Saris. But I got I wouldn't say inundated because four messages isn't inundated, but there was a couple of people who said that I talk utter shit, which I can't deny, but I think, you know, obviously they're very keen to keep their sort of Northern identity and kind of really embrace what's going on down there. And I think, look, we love Alex Anderson. You know, there's a lot of fantastic Sale players that we know personally who are friends of the podcast. And I think, you know, them making that statement, getting all the way to the final is pretty special.
And ultimately, they're not quite as good as Average Joes, because Average Joes did beat Globo Gym.
They did. Maybe there's another chapter to come. I'm sure there is.
I was going to say that I love the fact that there's some fans, actually. That's the best thing about rugby, right? And Chloe and I were kind of talking about this. If you've got a sense of humour and you can embrace kind of being cheeky, I think it's the best sport in the world. I love that people got a flag made with Average Joes, that people were, that Sale social media put out, you know, a meme of kind of Globo Gym with all the face of Sarries on versus Average Joes of Sale. I just think just stuff like that is amazing. And when fans come and get so embraced in it, and that's the best side of sport, and that's the best side of rugby, and why, you know, and the fact that, like, you know, even when I played the 6.5 shirts with Chris Robshaw, you know, people just throw stuff out there and you can either get really bothered and perturbed about it, or you can just roll with it and go, yeah, we both were two average 6.5s that sort of did a job. And I just love those Sale fans did that and ran with it, because it is, you know, this podcast is never meant to be about kind of like the minute detail. There's other people we said that do this. It's meant to be about the fun, the emotion, the people. And I think watching those Sale fans get embrace it, all wearing Average Joe's tops and, you know, flags and shit, and absolutely loving it. I think that's why I love this sport. Not anything else, really. It's just the fact you can run with it and have a sense of humour and just go with it.
I wonder if Average Hask should be a feature on next season. We'll find a way to wangle that in some way. Let's keep the pace up. Biggest headline for you?
I think Eddie getting signed up for Australia before England, who sacked him, had got their coach in place, sort of sums up Eddie and also where we are a little bit at the moment at the RFU. It's a bit of a statement of where England are at the moment.
It's been a turbulent old year on a number of levels as well. Biggest sadness, Hask?
It's a hard one, because obviously we lost Donny Weir, which, you know, he was kind of the definition of resilience, and again embodied everything about rugby in terms of, you know, his personality, you know, his sort of, you know, his famous, you know, mistaken identity stuff from the Lions, and just his character and fighting to the end, and sort of just, you know, and how he managed to sort of battle on, and the amount of money he's raised, and actually the profound effect that money is now having in terms of research, that they're actually very close to finding something that will make a profound difference. And this would never have happened if they weren't able to kind of actually activate this level of research and, you know, put it out there. So I think his passing, just because, again, you know, taken too soon in a way that you would never want. I'm gutted I never got to know him properly. I only met him when we were up in Scotland for our Good Bad Rugby tour last year. And by then, he couldn't really speak. Was obviously confined to a chair. But, you know, anyone who knows him knows what an absolute legend is. And you can see why, because a amount of people that wanted to help and bent over backwards to help him, you know?
Yeah. Actually, it was very nice to see Cathy and the kids taking the Premiership trophy out at Twickenham on Saturday. Doddy, obviously a winner with Newcastle, I think back in 97 or something like that. You obviously knew him well, and it goes without saying that it desperately missed. But outside of the great Doddy?
Well, obviously, it's not been a great year for Premiership clubs. It's not been... I think also the greatest sadness is how we still promote our game, I think, for me. And the fact that we still focus on all the crap bits. And right. We never focus on the great stories. We never focus on the great men this game builds. And, you know, he's talked about Peter O'Marnessy, Keith Earls, people who are winning in Munster. And, you know, the amount of games they've played, the consistency in their performances over the years, how we sell what rugby instills in our young, in our characters and everything else. And we just focus on all the bad stuff. And we seem to talk about that more. How are we ever going to grow as a game?
We try quite
sell?
Hard to keep
we
it light.
Try, we
keep
try,
light,
but
keep it light.
We try. No, but that's my greatest sadness.
Maybe it's changing.
For sadness.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. I think. I hope it is changing. Go on, Hask.
Look, I was going to say, do you know, it's very interesting. Obviously, I was watching on social media, like clips popped up, and I saw Jim Hamilton with his podcast, obviously interviewing lots of different people. And he was speaking to someone, I don't know who it was. I didn't stay long enough. It was more his comments about talking about rugby and kind of promoting it. And actually made a very interesting comparison to the UFC in terms of what they, you know, how they market themselves in terms of the, you know, the highlights, bits and pieces. And because I think I think rugby's got itself into such a muddle now. It doesn't know what to do, and it's like, and also the, I think because of the nature of the world, is that they, you know, UFC obviously promote knockouts and, you know, fighting and trash talk and kind of all the spectacle. And rugby's so hamstrung by all of its values, and now a concussion epidemic and a financial thing, and trying to be seen to be the right thing and to be inclusive. It's actually very funny that, you know, one sport where, you know, you're able to kind of really, really promote those bits. Actually, that's what rugby needs, I think. And I actually agree with Jim. I think, you know, we're so concerned now about, like, what do the younger generation think? What do kids at school think? What do people watching it think? What do the sponsors think? What about health and safety? And it's like, we've got ourselves into such a muddle. I think the only way to really survive and to do this is to put your eggs in one avenue. And bear in mind that if you do, you know, if you do start promoting massive collisions and, you know, footwork and sort of, you know, big hits, people getting knocked over, that you're going to grow the game. If you put characters out there, you have a bit of edge, you have a bit of fun, you're going to build the game. At the moment, if you're doing what you're doing, you're just not going to get anywhere because you're just perpetually terrified about all the fallout, and like you're fucking around with rules and you're messing around with stuff. You're just looking at it all the wrong way. And I think the problem is, right, if you do all this trust and you go nuclear and you don't tell anyone and get anyone bored with it, then you're going to fall apart. But I think someone in rugby needs to go, right, this is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to have a massive fallout for like 2 or 3 months. Everyone's going to lose their mind. Everyone's going to lose their shit. But we've got a plan. Stick with it. Don't stab ourselves in the back. And weather it, and then the game will be back. At the moment, it is going rapidly, rapidly down the toilet because we're all trying to be all things to all men and women and all things, you know, and it's bollocks.
I was going to say, like, Zara went to the gym and she put on Conor McGregor's thing on Netflix, and she was only going to do 10K on the bike, and she got so ensconced to his character and who he is. She's not someone who likes UFC at all and would never stay up to watch a UFC event, but his character brought her in. She ended up doing 20, double the time, 20K, just because she ended up watching it, his fight, his comeback, his 2-year comeback fight, and she couldn't turn it off because of the character of what he is and what he said, what he sold. And that is what, you know, you're not going to, some people have their opinion on Conor McGregor. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Or is he just the best that ever was? you know, he's, but he's someone that people will buy into from whatever background you're in, whether you're wealthy, whether you're poor. There's something that either stimulates conversation in you, or, you know, stimulates you not to like him, but it stimulates something that you want to watch, and it's a product that you want to watch. You know, he tells you himself how much he's changed the game, but you can't deny it.
I keep remembering that expression: if you try and be everything to everyone, you end up being nothing to anyone.
Yeah.
And I think that is rugby's problem at the moment: is it's trying to spread itself too thinly. It's got to work out what its identity is. It's got to go really hard after it. It's got to recognise it's a collision sport. It's got to build up characters who step outside the safety and, you know, the PR boundaries. It's got to let its tall poppies grow. And I think it's happening. I do think it is coming. So let's not give up just yet. Let's hope the next season it kind of...
It's not happening because they use the language, it's a collision avoidance sport now, and they're not hits, they're tackles, and they are, you know, and they can't highlight anything. Yeah, you can't do that. And it's all about those five pillars of value, you know, like friendship, trust, love, or whatever fucking else that no one cares about, but it's the thing that they hammer home. It's just, it's not about that, is it? It's like, you know, Conor McGregor will entertain you, but he might throw a trolley through a bus window. It's not ideal. Again, you know, I think there are better role models, but I think what sells rugby? Fast-paced collisions, entertainment, footwork, tackles, people getting smoked over, rough fights, aggression, everything. What doesn't sell it is, I know Chatty Cathy's talking about feelings and making sure we use the right terminology in case you offend everyone, and like making rules more complicated and talking about health and safety, and just, you know, it's just go away. But what do I know, eh? I'm not, you know, I'm an acquired taste.
I tell you what, let's finish with a couple of look aheads. The World Cup winners will be, we'll clip this up and stick it in a time vault. Hask, your World Cup winner.
The World Cup winner shall be Ireland.
Wow.
New Zealand. Is he Australia?
New Zealand, Africa.
Ireland, France, New Zealand. Yeah, Australia. Australia. Something like that. No, I'd say Ireland. I'd say Ireland. I'm going with Ireland.
I am going to stick with where I've stuck with, and I think France at home. What I worry about is we're not talking about South Africa enough.
Or New Zealand.
I don't think consistently New Zealand are good enough at the moment. But we'll wait and see.
It's a mad world, like not talking about New Zealand. Like, I just don't think they've suddenly got a bad team. I just, you know, I mean, their players are still like next level. If you watch what they're doing in the Super 15 and, like, you know, carving up and guys coming to the forward, Ardie Sevier is still probably the best number eight in the world at the moment. Aaron Smith's up there with Dupont as the best nine in the world on his day. I don't know. I just don't think you can ever vote against. And then Eddie, Australia, we're going to, is it this weekend's the first game? We're going to find out what he's been cooking up, whether they're any use. I just can't see a Southern Hemisphere side not being right up there towards the end. But again, what do I know? Turns out a lot, because I guessed right the Premiership final anyway, but don't worry about it.
We're all hedging our bets. I'm not sure I can pick one. I do think a pound on England is going to be worth it. If they can get... they can get the Sarries boys firing, keep it simple. England are a good World Cup team, normally. South Africa are
history
the best.
Wise,
well,
yeah.
History-wise, they can find something from nothing. I think Australia are going to be fascinating. I've just got a horrible feeling about South Africa. You just get them in the knockouts. They squeeze the life out of everybody.
They are made for World Cups. They are absolutely made for them. But I think...
Rassi will be back to his tricks.
I think if you look at what Ireland did last autumn... and you look what Ireland are now, I reckon, and look what Munster did on the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, good old-fashioned couple of driving balls.
I just think they've got so many hurdles to overcome. Those pool games,
yeah.
Then into a quarter-final. They've never made a semi-final before, so if they do it, there's an emotional high there. And then if they get through the semi-final...
Yeah, no, I agree with that, but I also think that South Africa have those issues as well. I think if they get to the quarter-finals...
But I think South Africa as a team are more conditioned to... they've been there, they've done it, yeah. They're comfortable with the expectation.
Yeah, no, I'm not. But what I'm saying is I think there's where South Africa's potential slip-up could be would be in a pool game.
Yeah.
I think if they, depending on where they get to the quarterfinals, they're going to be hard. But there could be a potential slip-up for them in
the other
games.
Thing that I worked out this weekend is that South Africa play Ireland and then Scotland. So by the time Ireland and Scotland meet each other, that is your first knockout game.
Yeah.
Because one of them will have presumably lost.
Yeah.
So that your high stakes come very early, and yeah. It's a very, very long run from there to the final.
Yeah,
so
it's if any of the teams on that side of the draw win it, it's got to be one of the most impressive Rugby World Cup wins, because yes. they're not getting an easy game. Because they're down games, they're going to, you know, they've either got Samoa
They'll all be about bonus points as well.
Yeah, and you're going to have to field your a majority of the time. You can't be making wholesale changes.
No.
I think you're going to, and then it's what, you know, you think back to Wales in that semi-final and how just beat up their squad was.
Yeah.
You know, that side of the draw, it's going to be who can manage their players the best as well.
Yeah. Has gone Ireland, Tin's gone France. I've gone South Africa, which means lump on New Zealand, England and Australia, if you're wise in what you do. I'll tell you what we do just before we finish, Hask, because I know you've got loads of other bits to be getting into. We don't want to keep you from your holidays. Should we have a quick reflection on our season as well? So we started off, God, it feels a long time ago, at Tindall Towers with the new additions. Bodie, who we can hear is very chatty in the background. We had Fox Davis with us as well as Ben Kayser. We have been on a bit of a road trip since then, because this season we've spoken to Warren Gatland, Matt Kvesic, Sean Edwards, Ellis Genge and Jack Knoll, Shane Horgan, Jamie Roberts, Bob Skinstat, David Pembroke, Wayne Barnes, Sam Whitelock, Bill Sweeney, Simon Massey-Taylor, Eddie Jones, Jordan Murphy, Greg Laidlaw, Tommy Bowe, Lawrence Delalio, Matt Dawson, Johnny Sexton, Eddie Hearn, Anthony Watson, Jack Willis, Henry Arundel, Ben White, the boys from Ukrainian rugby, and Jason Fox. That is quite a cast list, actually, that we've had. Some real highs in there as well. We've had over 4.5 million listens this season. So thank you very much indeed to our family members who've been on overdrive with the click, repeat, reboot and go again. Unbelievably, I'm told it's an increase of nearly 20%. We've had over 1.8 million views on YouTube. We've had over 2 million subscribers across social media platforms, mainly because of Tins on I'm a Celeb, it says. 37 shows, 3 breakdowns, 3 specials, including our show dedicated to the late Her Majesty the Queen. God, that was this season as well, wasn't it?
I know. It's been...
what a year on so many levels.
Emotional roller coaster, Alex. An emotional roller coaster.
We're all ready for a holiday. We've been on commercial shoots with Domino's, Honda and Infinity Sports Travel, as well as at Aylesbury Rugby Club for their Play Together, Stay Together campaign, where Tins actually did play. Added to that, multiple green rooms at Twickenham. It's been quite a year for all of us. So therefore, a very quick fly through. Your favourite guest this year, Hask? Hello, Bodie.
Oh, that is a good one. I very much enjoyed Jason Fox. I thought he was very, very good. I thought he was very fun.
For you?
Ones that jump out, Eddie Hearn, just a way, different mentality of how he thinks about things.
You enjoyed staring at his shoulder for 2 hours as well.
And when someone, you feel that you want to get in there, you feel that you like him more because of how hard he made you work for it.
It's all about the chase.
Yes, that one. Who else? I obviously wasn't on Foxy. I would have loved to have been on the Foxy one.
Ibiza was mad for all sorts of reasons. Eddie's farewells, I think, were quite emotional, particularly for you, Hask. I think we were the only boat rowing in the direction of supporting him. Actually, having seen him on Sunday as well, he's looking very well. He's looking very like ready to go. He wouldn't give anything in terms of ammunition around World Cup. But I think most fans, now the dust has settled, would say they'd love to see Australia lift that Bledisloe Cup again. I think he'll be very good for Australian rugby.
Anthony Watson, I thought, was a very good show.
Yeah,
great honesty in terms of what characters and a bit more of the on-depth of what... go on, Hask.
You know, when we did the show with Shane Horgan and was it Benjamin Kayser when we sort of did...
And Rog, on European rugby.
Yes, European rugby and Shane Horgan, but then also a Bobby Skinstat show. That was amazing. What a boy he was. I would have loved to have been played with him and been on the Smash with him. He was a proper boy.
He was. Poster boy for Bok rugby for many a year. Anything else
his,
from you,
his brother shows? Has actually just moved into Minchinhampton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I get to see him every now and again for a coffee.
Oh, nice. Good.
Just so I'll let you know.
Anything else we're proud of this season? No awards. We don't really tend to go in for those. No. Hopefully we've just spread a little bit of cheer for an hour a week. Thanks. Not much more than that.
Adverts.
Oh, yes, the adverts, Hask. Which has been your favourite?
The Domino's Pizza one was amazing, just purely for the acting skills and the shambles of it. It was great. And then I'm trying to think what else. The filming the Infinity Cruise boat with me wearing like that thong and like all the support staff like trying not to look me in the eye as I was like, you know, posing around on that bed was pretty terrifying. I also think the Honda one where, you know, apparently the girls won, but actually smashed them on every single one of the thing and broke one of the cars. And dented it, and everyone tried to be like, it's fine. It's fine. That's why I've got insurance. It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And because it was Tins who did it, everyone was like, oh, that's absolutely fine. If I did it, oh, stern words in the corners, you know, whispered meetings, all that bollocks I've put up with my entire life.
Do you just Hass, want to explain how Tins broke the car?
Yes. So basically, I don't know where I start. Well, so when we did the domino shoot where basically Alex's lovely wife's Fiat 500, which is basically like a portaloo on wheels. It's been sort of dented and dinged and like even Alex's own sort of admittance, the dog shit in the back of it and they just don't pick it up. Do you know what I mean? It's just like a real sort of feral family car. We decided that we thought it was quite funny to jump on it. And because it's got quite a sloping bonnet, I tried to do the sort of the policeman from, you know, every sort of 1950s, 1960s police driver, you slide across the bonnet and go across. Obviously couldn't do it on that, so we just jumped on the roof and wrecked it to Mrs. Payne's sort of chagrin. She was very upset with that. And then the next day we went to do a Honda shoot and I decided that I could slide across the top of the bonnet. And if you catch it right, obviously I slid straight across it. I thought this is brilliant. And obviously in slow motion, as I went across, you saw it sort of buckled a little bit, but it carried on. Tins tried to do it. As he slid across, his knee hit the front side of it to start with, so dented it. Then his arse slid across it, and then as it went off the other side, it completely dented the bit on it. And everyone, I mean, Paul, our videographer or director at the time, was shocked. He had to quickly walk off vaping quite furiously, panically vaping, trying to hide himself in the cloud strawberry cheesecake ether. And then producer Shira, who unfortunately is a playground snitch, saw that and started getting all flustered and panicking and then basically dobbed this into Honda because they reckon that no one would have noticed. Now, I'll admit, the knee dent that Tins left, people were going to see that. The other bit, we could have got away with it. But yeah, we basically broke it. And then, you know, because it was Tins, everyone just smoothed it over. But even then, I have question marks were over me, like who started it? You know, I think you should do it. You've led Tins astray, as opposed to him being the oldest one of all of us, and that he was the misbehaved. So yeah, we broke it.
But it's like one of those days where, and you just sort of get to figure out where things go in a changing room. There was only two of us there, and we just started giggling, and we were like, "Well, what can we do next? What can we do next?"
I had gone to the loo, and my parting words before I left you was, don't do anything to fuck this shoot up. It's all going on track. We're looking for a renewal. I went away for 5 minutes. I came back and everybody was clustered around a bonnet with £15,000 worth of damage done to it.
But it's just, it was sort of like then when we're getting in the car and it's, as you imagine, we're just such kids. And then, you know, I get in with all the the milk in the back seat, and I could just see Hask's eyes change. And I'm like, there is no chance I'm getting out of this car with any of this in this bowl. And then immediately he just hammers it, and it gone within 2 seconds. And it was like, well, it doesn't matter now. You can drive as fast as you want because it doesn't bother me. I can't get any wetter. The car has just taken all the beating, and just do it in a quick time, will you please?
A couple of very smart Hondas on their way to the scrapyard.
They were very comfy, though, may we just say. Very, very comfy
cars.
Very
comfortable. Very, and more work to be done with Honda as well. Can I just clarify two things? One is that I do pick the dog shit up when it goes in the back of the car. I don't leave it there for all and sundry. And the second is the extraordinary thing about having been tagged into your post off the back of our Tintanic shoot for the cruises is just the extraordinary flood of commentary from housewives on your timeline. Is there a single housewife in Britain that doesn't follow, congratulate, love, heart emoji you at this point in the calendar?
As you already know, never read below the line.
Never read below the line. There's a lot of middle-aged love for you there, though. right, should we finish up with anything else? I think we've sort of covered most of it, haven't we? It has been a lot of fun. We all need a holiday, and then we've got to lock and load for what's going to be an extraordinary World Cup. Are you ready for that? Have you got pink passes left, right and centre, or are you still negotiating your release clause from day-to-day family life?
So no, we'll see how what we've got to do. I feel that I do get very excited because it means, you know, you think of that Honda shoot, we were only together for 6 hours, Hask. You know, going back to Japan, we were going to be together for 6 weeks. Anything could happen. I'm looking forward to what I think is France are just going to put on such an amazing show. What needs to happen, though, is them win that first game on the 8th of September.
Yeah.
Because then it will explode.
That's the
belief would be there. And yeah.
Hopefully it's been a bit of fun. I hope you've enjoyed the journey that has been season 3 as The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. Thank you to all of you who get in touch, who leave a little bit of love, a fair amount of abuse and some fairly interesting points along the way as well. We value enormously those who tune in and feedback on what we get up to. We've got a few bits to mark your card with just before we wrap things up. So, Tins, cruise read, please.
The World Cup is fast approaching, and thanks to Infinity Sport Travel, we will be having the amazing epic cruise ship in the centre of Marseille.
We will.
In a city where it's almost impossible to get a hotel room, apparently. Do we know this for true or not?
It certainly is now, yeah. And actually, you don't want to be in a hotel room anyway. You want to be on the floating city.
No, you want to be on the floating city. That is the Norwegian epic with Infinity Sport Travel. And 4,000 others floating in this luxury hotel. There are 15 restaurants, 15 bars on board. Loads of things to do, including bowling, a choice of 5 swimming pools. You'll have seen me throwing a little 3-pointer. You can come and take me on at one-on-one. There's a theatre, and for Hask, there's a cigar bar too. We'll be there for the opening weekend with a viewing party on deck for the opener between France and the All Blacks, as well as the quarter-final weekend. If that is enough, it's not enough, because Hask will be back DJing there too. To secure your tickets for what will be a truly unique experience to see the World Cup in France in 2023, head to infinitysportstravel.com/GBNR.
I watched Animal House last night. When was the last time you watched that? One of the greatest films of all time.
Ever.
But what I was thinking is, if we've got 4,000 people ready to go, what about if we did? I would love to know, what is the Guinness World Record for largest toga party of all time? 4,000 people has got to get close.
It's got to be up there, yeah.
Should we see if we can organise?
What about the biggest boat race? 2,000
v 2,000. We could do 2,000 v 2,000. We have to go for a Guinness World Record.
Of some description.
And if you're one of the 4,000...
Ideas, please.
What can we do with 4,000 rugby balls on a boat in Marseille for 4 days will get us into the Guinness World Records?
Do you think that's what Hask's life's like?
The biggest mass gilet burning in the history of the world would be quite useful.
Toga party or gilet burning?
Cheslin Colby's just been released from Toulon.
Oh. Look at Hask with the breaking news as we wrap up season 3. I wonder what's happened there.
Is that going to be something to do with Rugby World Cup and release and how much it's costing them? And Hask, you are the voice of it. They don't really give a shit about contracts, do they? They'll just rip them up and then if you want to sue him, come get us. But if they know that he's not going to be playing for a lot of next season because of World Cup commitments and everything else, is it a cheaper way of them getting out?
Probably, yeah. It just says he's parted ways. 29-year-old Cheslin Colby has left Toulon, but he did reaffirm that he wanted to stay. So something exciting to see. Maybe we should get him on the podcast. I did speak to about getting on the podcast for season 4 is Aaron Smith.
Oh, he'd be great. What a finale for him as well. He's wrapped things up with the Highlanders. He's got a fairy tale send off. one of the greats. We should definitely have him on next season. We look forward to that. Breaking news in amongst our promos, Chesney Coleman has left Toulon. Who knew? We'd love to get him back on sometime, obviously having spoken to him in the past. A couple of other bits and bobs. Check out our World Cup after party. We're going to be at Guildford on the 31st of October, which is 2 days after the Rugby World Cup finishes. I am not quite sure how the hell we're going to sellotape ourselves back together and head out on a 17-date tour, but that is what we're doing. Also, throughout November and into December, we're in London, Swansea, Cardiff, Edinburgh, Northampton, Reading, Oxford, Leicester, Birmingham, Southend, Exeter, Plymouth, Newcastle, Nottingham, Manchester and Bath. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster. Search Good Bad Rugby and you will find them there. It'd be lovely to see you out and about, hopefully celebrating what has been a mega Rugby World Cup. Do you want to do the Good Scouts Rugby? And actually, what a season for the Good Scouts Rugby.
It has been a fantastic year for Good Scouts. Don't forget our sister pod, obviously, the Good Scouts the Rugby, sponsored by Vodafone. Elmer and Mo and Scaz will be having the inspiration Exeter winger Jodie Ounsley on this week's show, where she'll be talking about the first ever female deaf player to play for England's senior side and sensationally being named as Fury, one of the new gladiators in the reboot of the 90s show.
Do you know who else is involved in that? Is Alex Gray. Shaggy Gray.
Oh, really?
Ex of NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Ex of London Irish, yeah. So he's one of them as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's coming back. We did say Hass should have been on there as, what was it, what were we going to call you? What's your gladiator
Sabotage,
name?
No.
The Sabotage. Yeah, I thought Sabotage was a good name for you. Controversy.
Backstabber. Controversy.
You'd have been good
Yeah,
at that.
I'd love that. I could have done. I could have been the modern day wolf. 100%. I mean, I could just got once my new barnet sewed in on November, I'll have a curly perm set up. I'll just mean to everyone. I'll push other gladiators over, push the contestants over. I did actually call up my agent. I was like, why is it, what, how's this got through the net? And apparently they didn't want anyone in the existing TV profile. So obviously I was too well known. You know, probably too costly, I'd imagine, to get me to commit to something like that. And the body's not great.
Right, that's us done. Well done, Hask. Lovely to see you. And Bodie, who's checked in as well. We're going to finish.
I'll just say one thing. Doesn't it, Hask, look better when it's all pixelated and really slow?
It really does. Yeah, I hope it's been a clearer picture for you than for us, because the delay has been eternal and the picture has been piss poor. But other than that, it's been a lot of fun for the three of us to catch up for the final time this season. And we're going to finish by saying thank you to all of our guests who we've mentioned. Thank you to you, the listeners and the viewers, for the, I was going to say love and feedback, but for the love, the abuse and everything that comes in between. And a big thank you as well. We're a bloody nightmare and we know it, but a big thank you to all of our team who do a very good job at keeping this show on the road and straightening out the mess that we make of it. So, Shira, Ollie H, Darrett, Dan, Paul, Xander, Tommy Rockets, Kath, Craig Superfan, Sam Stash, Ollie W, Ali, and our eternally long-suffering MD who has dropped form, Nick, keeps coming back for more, and we're very grateful to him and to all of them for the way that they keep us and our show on the road. We are a pain in the arse and we know it, but we're very, very grateful to each and every one of them. As far as what's next for us, the beach is calling, as I hope it is for you too. We've then got the World Cup in September, our tour after that, and loads of great guests, ideas, and a whole lot more chaos planned for season four. Very much looking forward to what is to come, starting with the big dance in France at the beginning of September. You ready for a bit of downtime?
Yeah,
you need to dry yourself out, man.
There is possibly that. The last two weekends have been...
The Betty Ford Clinic for you for the next 2 months, and then we'll undo the damage.
What I'm very good at is going hard, but then going zero.
Right.
I'll go net zero for a while.
You're heading to hills and living in a rock for a bit.
I never drink when there's not a party.
Right.
I just need to stop going to parties.
That's one big party.
I'm looking forward to... I'm going to get away with the fam... some point in July and then possibly again in August. And we've got a few things cooking backstage that we need to be on, so we'll still be in. Even though the visual show disappears, the road show behind it keeps going.
And they come from a land?
Somewhere.
Watch this space on that one. Well done. We've had a lot of fun. We will have a lot of fun again in a few months' time. Once again, thank you to all of you for being involved and being part of everything that is Good, Bad and Rugby. The show is produced by Shara Kilgallen and Ollie Hunter and is a Folding Pocket production. To the beach. Enjoy yourselves. See you in September.
You have been listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. I hope you enjoyed it. But if you didn't, well, you didn't pay anything for it. So what exactly is your problem?
just like a real sort of feral family car.